Pick your friends, pick your nose, but don't pick your friends. Medicare for the Lazy Man podcast, a podcast that proudly flies the flag every day. And now his frown is almost always upside down. Medicare expert Doug Jones.
Well, hello again, ladies and gentlemen. It is the Medicare for the Lazy Man podcast, and you have joined us on an excellent, excellent, bright, sunny day. At least it's bright and sunny in Illinois. God knows what it's like in Arizona. I'm hoping that it's not dark and oblique, but we'll have to find out when we ask Randy. This is a podcast about Medicare and about how you can find your way into Medicare without a lot of stress and distress. We can certainly guide you in the right direction, and it's going to be the direction that's drawn out in my book, Medicare for the Lazy Man, Simplest and Easiest Guide Ever. If you go to Amazon.com and put Medicare for the Lazy Man into the search window, my book will pop up, and then you're going to have your choice of the Audible book, the paperback book, or the Kindle book, either one or maybe all of those, whichever is to your liking. And after about maybe an hour and 10 minutes of reading, maybe after one stiff drink, you're going to have a grasp of Medicare and what you have to do about Medicare that will exceed the knowledge level of about 98% of people that are younger than you that haven't even thought about Medicare. In other words, Medicare doesn't have to be a challenging, scary thing. And we're going to help you through that process by means of the book and to a lesser extent by means of this podcast, which we do several times a week. And when we do this podcast several times a week, first of all, it's always introduced by my Canadian nephew, Drew McMillan. And the engineering part, the engineering function is ably and professionally handled by my friend, Randy Carson. Now, Randy left us with a cliffhanger on the last episode. He asked a trivia question, and we're here to find out what the answer to that question is. So come on in, Randy.
Hey, Doug, how are you today? I see you've got your Highway 66 t-shirt.
Route 66, yes, the Mother Road.
Yeah, we love Route 66 out here because it's just so much history. I love history. Yeah. Didn't used to. When I was a kid, I hated history. Now I love history. Is that because I'm old?
No, it's not. It's because your brain is actually bigger and functioning better. I always loved history, but I like being an adult with history and going out there and actually experiencing it. In 2008, I fell in with a bunch of people driving old Corvettes, and I am now one of those people, old people driving old Corvettes. And we took 2.5 weeks on Route 66 from Chicago to the Santa Monica Pier. It was a fantastic trip. And now we, except for when people are hiding under their beds because of some coronavirus panic, we take a road trip with these people every year. Not always 2.5 weeks, but we always get out on the road with our old Corvettes and drive someplace. So anyway, that was a long way around to approve of your interest in history.
Cool. Well, as Doug said, I left a cliffhanger last podcast, and the cliffhanger was I guess it was kind of like a two-part A and B cliffhanger. The way I stated it last week, it was the answer to it was an assumed yes. I said, so what is the location of the last active cavalry division in the United States Army? So I
wanted to answer that question. I wanted to show off my knowledge of cavalry operations, but I failed. I did not know. He had me stumped.
Well, the assumed yes was true. There is one cavalry division still active in the United States Army, and it has a long history, but I won't go through all that history, but it is the first cavalry division in the United States Army. and it is located in Fort Hood, Texas.
What a historic name for a fort, named for John Bell Hood, a Confederate general. And that's probably the, you know, woke snowflakes are probably going to come after that name at some point.
Yeah. Well, let them try.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly.
Yeah. I really do love history like that, because you look back in the you know, Army, Navy, Air Force. I mean, I'm all about military because my dad was in the Navy, and a variety of the friends I know were in the Air Force, Army, so forth and so on. And you look back in some of the history and it's just freaking amazing.
Well, my dad was in the Army, and I would say the same thing. He was in the Army in World War II and Korea, which kind of was against his will since he already had a family. He didn't intend to go to Korea, but got scooped up in it. His father served in the Spanish-American War, and then he was a captain in the First World War, and he was forever after known as Captain Jones by the people in his small town. Every time they had a scrapbook with a bunch of newspaper articles about him, he became a lawyer and then a judge, but he was always referred to as Captain Jones, and there'd be articles in the scrapbook, Captain Jones and his bride Pearl are going to Fayetteville, Arkansas for the weekend, you know, stuff like that. They plan to be back on Monday morning. And
so it was that kind of news, huh? Yeah. Like the small town big, news,
kind of a big fish in a really, really small pond.
Yeah.
And,
yeah,
and then he dropped dead at age 54 of the same malady all my male ancestors seem to have fallen victim to, which is a myocardial infarction. So he just keeled over at age 54. My dad was 10 years old. His brother was about 7. And that was a scary thing for people to go through, because it happened in 1930, the start of the Dust Bowl.
Oh, my gosh. Yes.
Go ahead.
Yeah, go ahead. No, I was going to say the Dust Bowl. That's a whole story in and of itself.
Oh, yeah. And this was in Oklahoma, which was closest to the Dust Bowl, although they were in southeast Oklahoma in McCurtain County, which is not typically dusty. The dust was mostly in the western half of the state. you know, and I ran across a reason to think of a funny story that shows my stupidity and to a lesser extent, my lovely bride, who was not as observant on this particular day as she should have been. But I heard a podcast in which Dave Thomas, who is on SCTV and a bunch of other comedy shows and everything else, he does a dead on impression of Bob Hope. And so the conversation turned to Bob Hope, and he said he visited Bob at his home one time in California, and he found that Bob Hope had an artifact, which was a photograph of George Patton during World War II. George Patton made a pledge, and it inspired our World War II soldiers in Europe to emulate him. He said, "My goal in pursuing the enemy as hard and as fast as I can is to get to his river," and that's the Rhine River in Germany, "and urinate in it." And so Bob Hope had a photograph of Patton actually urinating in the Rhine River. And he was, reluctant to give that up when the Patton family asked for it back. He said, they're not getting this one. So it reminded me of a bunch of years ago when one of my grandsons came home from school, probably, I'm guessing, second grade, with a request from the teacher. We're studying the military history of members of your family. So if you have any artifacts, please bring them to school so we can display them, and you will, get extra credit or something like that. So my grandson then, kill your mic, Randy. There you go. My grandson, we asked for a picture from us, and I found a picture of my father that showed him in a uniform. It wasn't fatigues, but he was a master sergeant at about the age of 22 during World War II in the Signal Corps. And so anyway, it showed a nice background, and he was standing there, and we sent that picture, and it was at the school for the period of time they were studying the military history of the members of the kids' families. And then my grandson came home and told his mother that They liked the picture so much that they made a smaller display, and the teacher asked if they could keep that picture until the rest of the year, until the end of the school year. So that picture was up for months and months and months. Eventually, the teacher returned it to my grandson. The grandson gave it to his mother. His mother, our daughter, sent it to her parents. And I looked at that picture before I put it away, and I realized he was doing the same thing that George Patton did. Here's a picture that went to the kid's school, hung on the wall or on a bulletin board all of the school year. And here's my father urinating in the Rhine River. And I never even noticed that that was what was going on in the picture. So my wife and I pledged never to tell anybody because we were actually afraid our daughter would be mortified that she had sent that to school without noticing. None of us noticed what was going on in the lower half of the picture. So anyway, here we are to talk about Medicare, and I've got all of these things. I'm trying to get my desk cleaned up a little bit, and that's not going very well. And I have some articles, and I have some mailbag items, and Randy always goes for the mailbag items. So the articles that I've picked out to read have actually piled up. So one I ran across is interesting. It says a group of 4,000 former public servants, including firefighters, police officers, teachers, and EMTs, say that New York City is stiffing them on their health insurance by forcing them onto a new plan that costs more money for fewer benefits. Under the new, and here's where the meat of the article is, under the new Medicare supplement plan, they say it's a Medicare supplement plan. The name of the plan is Alliance Medicare Advantage. It's a Medicare Advantage plan. It's not a Medicare supplement plan. And these retired city employees are up in arms about being forced to take this inferior plan. The headline of this article is retired New York City employees sue. They've filed suit to block new inferior Medicare coverage. So anyway, under the new Medicare supplement plan, which is really a Medicare Advantage plan, the city's retired heroes will be required to pay $15 copays for many routine services, including specialist visits, diagnostic tests, and trips to urgent care, according to the Manhattan Supreme Court lawsuit that was filed on Sunday. And this is a current article. This is not one of these oldies I've dredged up. So currently, they don't have to pay any copay, but they're going to have a $15 copay per encounter imposed upon them. In addition, not all doctors have to accept the plan, and patients will need prior authorization for procedures that may result in a serious delay of medical tests or procedures, potentially endangering their health, the suit alleges. The health plan, which goes into effect January 1st, was also struck quietly between the city and the Municipal Labor Committee, a purely advisory group that retirees are not represented by, the filing claims. The two sides engaged in a charade of negotiating to reach the deal that affected some 250,000 retired government employees without their consultation. And once the plan was finalized, without a public hearing being held, it was only announced by the Office of Labor Relations website on July 14th, where it wouldn't be widely seen. The city does not have the right to impose materially diminished benefits upon people who are long retired and have depended upon vested benefits that were negotiated under earlier collective bargaining agreements that were in place when they retired. In other words, these people think that they're having benefits taken away from them. They're having additional costs imposed upon them, and they are pretty upset about it, upset enough to get together and file a class action lawsuit. They're saying that the city is pulling a safety net out from under former city employees. The deal does technically allow former public servants to opt out of the new plan, but remaining on their current plan will cost them, the filing notes. On top of also imposing the same fees as the new plan, the retired city workers will also have to cough up nearly $200 extra a month if they chose to stay with their current coverage. Supplemental insurance, called Medigap, covers the 20% that Medicare doesn't subsidize. And that's only 20% of Part B. Almost everybody that listens to this podcast knows more than the person who wrote this article. And actually, it was the work of three people. So we got three people that can't use terminology properly. We have Priscilla DeGregory, we have Julia Marsh, and we have Carl Campanile. Anyway, they interchange the terms in this article, Medicare Supplement, Medicare Advantage. But the plan that is being imposed upon these very angry retired employees of the city of New York is a Medicare Advantage plans with all the limitations that I warned people about, the removal of the freedom of choice that Medicare Advantage, by its nature, imposes on people. The subsidized coverage is costing the city over $500 million a year. Understandably, the city would like to reduce its healthcare costs, but it cannot do so by shifting those expenses onto the retirees. They're calling it Medicare Supplement. It is really a Medicare Advantage plan. I can't get over the fact that they're so sloppy with their terminology, their nomenclature in this article. So these employees, these retired employees, are very perturbed. A lawyer on the suit said, importantly, the obligation to pay for that insurance is not only established by law, but it's incorporated into most of the collective bargaining agreements that the city has entered into for decades. And another guy, a spokesman with the city law department, said the city is committed to selecting providers that are in the best interests of the city and its retirees. That, of course, means that they're not going to have the freedom of choice that everybody on Medicare supplement has, which is to go to any doctor you want to go to that accepts Medicare compensation. And that's almost every doctor. There are very few doctors who refuse to take Medicare patients that are covered by Medicare. Only a very small number of doctors refuse to do that. And the reason that they cite typically is that Medicare reimbursement is actually lower than their cost of doing business. So if they don't collect enough money from their patients, they're going to actually lose money staying in practice. But most doctors, 90-some percent, will accept patients with Medicare supplement insurance without question. So the rest of this article is Aetna sues New York City labor officials over tainted Medicare contract. A spokesperson with the Office of Labor Relations deferred comment to the law department. Meanwhile, on Friday, some 100 retirees had a die-in. Welcome to the 60s, people. And in fact, these are retirees. It may be that some of them croaked during the die-in that they had, or the protest that they had at City Hall. They dressed as the Grim Reaper and mimicked choking to death in protest of the plan. That sounds like it was pretty entertaining. Sarah Shapiro, a retired teacher with Cross Union Retirees Organizing Committee. What does that spell? C-U-R-O-C. CUROC. They said they're being thrown under the bus after decades of service to the city. We are in the midst of a pandemic, they say, but I say it's a panic. We have frail and sickly retirees who are in the middle of cancer treatment, she said. Earlier this month, Aetna, the city's largest private Medicare administrator, sued over the $43 billion alliance plan, calling it a tainted contract that was awarded to their unqualified rival bidder during the fixed bidding process. Well, the whole point is that they don't like losing freedom of choice and having to kick in medical expenses like that $15 copay out of their pocket for the use of medical services that are supposed to be covered by the insurance plan. The insurance plan is a smelly Medicare Advantage plan, not a beautiful, pristine Medicare supplement plan. So that's the terminology they used was sort of confusing, but in reality, it was just the description of the loss of freedom of choice and the imposition of fees that we see with all Medicare Advantage plans. So that's my story for today, Randy. And as cool. as I mentioned to you earlier, don't hang up on the listeners before I get out my trivia question that we will leave as a hanging over Chad for, or a hanging Chad for next episode.
Cool. That's great. I love hanging chads and I love cliffhangers.
Are we at the point in the podcast episode?
Yeah, we need to reel it in. because we are out of steam and we're coming into the station. So we need to thank our listeners. Thank you so much for joining us today. But I've got a couple things that we need to take care of business-wise before we let you go. You need to go to Amazon.com and order up your books, or you can get those at Barnes & Noble if you like the color illustrations in that one. Or you can get they really are. Yeah. And or you could get the Kindle version, or you can get the audio version. And they're all available at Amazon, other than the color version of the book, which is at the other store. So anyway, thank you for joining us. I'm going to turn it over to Doug because he's got a hanging chad / cliffhanger for us for next episode.
Hey, Randy, let me ask my trivia question here so that we can give people a chance to look up the answer before the next episode. What do you say?
I think that would be I love trivia.
All right. And with this question, basically, I'm referring to the last time the United States, the contiguous 48 states, was invaded by a foreign power. We know that the English invaded at least twice that we know of, and there may have been other types of incursions by foreign military units. There was one final time that the contiguous or the lower 48 states were invaded by a foreign power in a military sense. And so my question is, what was that event? Where did it occur? What year did it occur? You don't even have to answer all the things, but the location is important, and the year would be like a secondary credit, extra credit. So
cool.
That's my question.
That's your question. So let's go ahead and sign off for today. And you guys on the podcast need to, you know, jump on your computer and start researching, because that's a good one there. So let's go ahead and tell them thanks for joining us. Go to Amazon, go to all those other places and get the books, and no matter in what form they are. You have just spent about 32 and a half minutes listening to Doug Jones, the anti-insurance guy from Oklahoma, and now the Medicare for the Lazy Man trivia master.
Goodbye, everyone.